I'm Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is True Crime New England, Case Profiles Edition.
Hello, welcome back to another mini episode.
Thank you for joining us, as always, on our bi-weekly special edition Case Profile mini-series.
Yeah, if you guys are not familiar with our mini episodes, our case profiles, it is where we tell you and each other about cases of people of color based in New England. Most of the cases that we research are unsolved because we find that they just do not get the same media attention, media coverage from law enforcement, and it really contributes to how these cases are treated and how these cases are solved, if they ever get solved.
Right. It's a rare day when we have cases that have answers. A lot of the times we have cases that are not solved and therefore we'll have like a number at the end. And sometimes it's the worst thing is that sometimes we don't have a number for people to contact at all, which kind of shows how these cases are often treated. And that's really unfortunate.
Yeah. So the way that we do these is that Liz will tell you guys and myself about a case that she has researched herself. I will do the same, vice versa. So any kind of exclamations that you hear, any, wow, that's crazy. No way. Those are genuine because we do have a master list that we pull cases off of, but we really don't know many details about the case until we are telling each other and you guys while we're recording.
Exactly. And today, because you went first last time, Katie, it is my turn to tell you and our listeners a story first, in which I will be telling you the story of the murder of a young man named Jakeem Tully. My sources today, Fox 61, Web Sleuths, and a blog called Shanice's Blog.
All right.
It clearly was like a personal blog, somebody who knew Jakeem and was very, you know, upset by it. And, you know, I don't know if they knew him like really well, but it was a good bit of information. Let us begin how I always begin my stories on this case profile series with the phone call or the arrival of the police. You guys know it. Katie, you know it. I always do the same format. At 2:10 a.m. on July 20th, 2008, a call came into the Hartford Police Department. The call actually came from St. Francis Hospital, which we've talked about several times now, pretty prominent hospital in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the reason because a lot of these cases, they end up there in their treatment and then dying. And then also an episode we did about a pedophile doctor who worked at St. Francis Hospital. The person who was calling, like I said, from the hospital said that there was a patient there, and they had been shot. Again, this always starts the same. When the police arrived, they were met with the gravely injured 15-year-old Jakeem Tully.
No way.
Yeah, I know. 15. They just get younger and younger when we tell these stories. It's awful. So Jakeem had suffered from two bullet wounds. The first had struck him in the left bicep, while the second shot hit him in the left side of the chest. Unfortunately, by 2:42 a.m., about a half hour later, Jakeem was pronounced dead. Those are some pretty gnarly shots. And the angles of the bullets, too, like in his chest, that does a lot of damage. It's hard to come back from that. Luckily, when the police arrived, they were met with two people who had actually witnessed the event, and they came to the hospital, like they followed the ambulance and stuff, and they came and waited to talk to police, which I think is amazing.
Wow, that's rare.
Very rare, honestly. Apparently, around 2 a.m. that morning, Jakeem was standing in front of a 24-hour convenience store on Albany Street in Hartford, Connecticut. He was with a small group of other young men, teenagers, probably like young adult men. Suddenly, a car drove by, and it was filled with more men, and all of a sudden, shots were fired all over. When Jakeem was hit, he immediately fell to the ground in front of all the people he was with. Not one person called the police. Does this sound familiar to you? One of our first episodes had a very similar incident. The murder of Robert Joyle. He was killed in front of a whole bunch of, like, 100 plus witnesses, and nobody came forward. Yeah. Katie's face right now is aghast.
What?
Yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah.
They just stood there
And scattered, yeah. I know.
Oh.
I want to say maybe it's like my nursing instincts, like our nursing instincts to want to go and help. I think it's just being a normal, good human. Running away? Like, that's, I mean, I get it if, like, maybe, like, you're scared you're gonna get shot, but this was, like, after the drive-by, and nobody called the police still.
Like, shots fired. Okay, run away, hit the deck, cover your
Right.
head, cover your vital organs. Perfect.
Right, fine.
Once the danger has dissipated,
Yes.
you look around you. You assess the scene, make sure the scene is safe, you look around,
Right.
and that's not even just our nursing what we're trained to do, where
Right.
it's literally common sense. Like,
Right.
I was with other people, are they okay?
Exactly. Two men, the ones I talked about earlier, happened to be driving by the scene, and they very kindly stopped when they saw him lying on the ground, and they were like, oh, he really needs medical attention. Like, he's very injured. They actually put Jakeem in the back seat of their car and drove him to the hospital. Yeah, so that's God. That is really kind of them.
So two strangers literally off the street helped him instead of the people he was with, probably his friends, his own friends.
Correct.
Awesome.
Yep. These guys, they were cleared by police as just witnesses and ultimately helpers, and they're good. So they are the heroes of the story, that's for sure. Ironically, just barely 2 weeks before, on the 4th of July, Jakeem had been involved in another incident where he actually was shot for the first time. He was a passenger in a car that was on Albany Street, which is the same exact street he was on that he was killed. Yep. When another car drove by and once again fired shots out of the car. At this event, Jakeem only got like a minor injury. The driver of the car that he was with, James Deckie Brown, he was badly wounded, but as far as I know, he survived. James Deckie Brown was a known member of a gang.
I was waiting for that.
Yep, a local gang called Money Green. Immediately following Jakeem's death, police discovered that there had actually been a long-standing gang rivalry between two different local gangs who happened to be near each other in the north end of the city. I feel like it was like a north-south kind of thing.
Yeah.
Very territorial, which I never really understood. I mean, maybe just because I've never been in a gang, but like, what is so different from like this end of the street and that one that you have to kill each other or do whatever? Crazy.
What the fuck?
I don't even know. After identifying several people of interest, the police concluded that it likely was Jakeem was not the target and that it was kind of like a wrong place, wrong time thing. Apparently, the shooting was in retaliation for a recent murder of one Anthony Chunk Alexander, who was also a member of a gang. While police did actually, they did interview some people about Jakeem and what happened, they did not see much cooperation from the people that they spoke to, unsurprisingly, because snitches do get stitches, especially in a world where maybe they're part of a gang. That gets you in trouble. That takes your life. So I can empathize, but sucky.
Right. And if they watched someone they were hanging out with, let alone a friend or even an acquaintance, they were just with someone who they watched get shot and is bleeding out on the sidewalk. If they're not going to do anything for him then, why would they then, after he passed away, be like, oh, hey, by the way, officer, I noticed that the license plate started with four. Like,
Right.
if they're not going to help load him into an ambulance or call 911
Even
in the
call.
moment, they will not be saying a word to police after the fact.
Right, 100%. Jakeem's mother, Sandra Hyde, said that her son was truly at the wrong place at the wrong time and that he was a good kid. Jakeem was homeschooled, he loved playing basketball and football, and he had dreams of becoming a computer technician, which of course will never happen because of this stupid gang violence. And even if he was in a gang, he was 15. There's gotta be more investigation for a child. If you have any information about the homicide of Jakeem Tully, please contact the Hartford Police Major Crimes Unit at 860-757-4000. And that is the senseless murder of 15-year-old Jakeem Tully.
I will never, never, ever, 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 ever in my life understand why So many of the cases that we cover, whether they're mini episodes, whether they're full episodes, how so many of these cases involve witnesses,
right?
Involve someone dying in front of someone else, and they're just like, la la la.
Yep.
Like, what?
Every time.
Kind of a human being. Why are there so many human beings that are not willing to help others?
That's what scares me the most, I think.
Like, imagine you're with your friends. And you get shot at.
Right.
Which...
I'm not liking this imagination here.
Great. And gang-related or not, you don't have to be in... You could be in the nicest part of town. And guess what? This is fucking America, so you can still have bullets flying at you.
Sure.
I would like to think that the people I'm surrounding myself with would help solve my murder.
Katie, I would help solve your murder.
Thank you. I would help solve your murder.
Oh my God.
So I'd be in prison because I would find the murderer myself.
Vice versa. Honestly, same here. I'd be like, I don't care about any stitches. I'm going to snitch my little heart out. Because
I'll be given the stitches.
Right. Exactly. Because healthcare. Just kidding. You get the gist. But yeah, so I'm with you on that. So messed up. I don't know how anyone would betray their friend or anybody like that by not calling for help.
Even just a stranger on the street. Like, right. If I saw someone get shot in front of me,
right?
I'd like to think, yeah, I'd probably jump into a bush or something at the sound of gunshots.
Right.
But once the danger had subsided, I would stick my head out, mm-hmm. emerge,
yeah,
and then look around. Oh, shit, there's someone on the ground. And even if I'm calling 911 from the safety of my hiding space,
perfect.
Do something.
That's a good thing to do. Now, Katie, is your story just as disappointing?
My story's a little crazy.
Oh, good. Great.
It is the disappearance of Haydar Abushagra.
Okay.
My sources today are The Charlie Project, Unresolved Mysteries Reddit thread, and MassLive.com.
Okay.
40-year-old Haydar, nicknamed Harry, was last seen on the 300 block of Main Street in Manchester, Connecticut, at the car dealership that he owned on December 7th, 2011.
Okay.
At 8:24 p.m., he called his wife to let her know he was having a work meeting and would be home around 9 p.m. so he could take her on a little date to the movies.
Oh.
Harry never came home, and this was the last time he was ever heard from.
Oh, wow.
The next morning, his Mercedes was found in the parking lot of the car dealership.
Hmm.
When I was first reading that, I was like, what is Harry doing at 8:24 p.m.?
Hmm.
Most certainly that's not a work meeting.
Yeah.
I was having a work meeting at 8:24 p.m. on a weekday.
Not typically like a business like that.
No.
No.
It turns out that Harry indeed was having a work-related meeting,
oh.
to my shock, with several mechanics who were renting out a garage from him.
Okay.
The mechanics had not paid their rent, and they planned to meet and discuss this further the night of Harry's disappearance.
Ooh. That's not good.
Harry's dealership had actually folded in June of 2011 due to financial issues, as well as pending criminal charges against Harry.
Oh.
This is when he had begun renting the garage to the mechanics for some money.
Gotcha. Okay.
Harry's brother said that before Harry called his wife, he called him and told him he had to come down to the dealership because, quote, they're scaring me.
Oh, no.
The mechanics continue to deny any involvement in Harry's disappearance, but they have all refused to take polygraph tests.
Oh. I mean, I know we know now that those are kind of junk, but, and we did in 2011, but it's a, you know, it's a good, like, starting point.
And it's the principle. Right. It's the principle of the thing, even right. if the science is bunk.
Right, exactly.
It's good form. If you're asked to take a polygraph test, it's not just for funsies. Like, right. there's a reason why. You better go down and do it. Just get it over with. Call it a day.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you are a little worried that something might come up during the polygraph test.
Hmm. Right.
A week after Harry's disappearance, the mechanics let police know that they found Harry's car keys in the garage that the mechanics were renting, which had been searched prior.
Oh, God.
Other people came forward to police and told them that they had reason to believe that Harry had stashed cash in other various places.
Hmm.
While this has not been confirmed, Detective Max Cohen did find that Harry had gotten two uncirculated Connecticut license plates several days before his disappearance.
That's suspicious.
Harry left behind his wife and his enormous family of 6 children.
Oh, no.
The youngest children being quadruplets, who had just turned 1 at the time of his disappearance.
Hold on. 1 second.
Quadruplets. 1-year-old. 4 1-year-olds, okay? On top of 2 other kids.
I just got goosebumps, mostly because, first of all, that's so fucking sad. That's awful. That poor mom, who now has 2 kids plus 4 baby toddlers, and also because fucking quadruplets, that's fucking awesome. Like, wow, that's cool. That's so fucking sad.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, they actually made the news after the quadruplets were born because they were the first set of quadruplets born at UConn Health Center in 12 years.
Wow.
So they were on, like, they were known. They were on the news for that.
Ooh, that sucks.
If the mechanics truly didn't have anything to do with Harry's disappearance, there still is another possibility.
Oh?
Harry and his father both had multiple charges of fraud against them.
Okay.
Allegedly, they had both been accused of borrowing cars and then selling them.
Ooh.
Questionably at this dealership.
That Harry owned? Mm-hmm. Okay.
They were also accused of being a part of a group of car dealers that the federal government said was supporting Hezbollah, which is a militant Shia terrorist group.
Oh!
So they were accused of being a part of this, like, a terrorist organization, like selling cars for this terrorist organization.
Okay. Jesus Christ.
Harry's family maintains that he was not involved with this group, which, you know, I can buy it. I can buy it because we all know how this country treats Muslims.
Yeah, right.
So I can buy that part, but
wow.
At the time of Harry's disappearance, he was out on a $730,000 bail charge for 6 different felony charges. He also owed the Manchester, Connecticut tax collectors a loan about $23,000.
Wow.
So he is drowning financially. His dealership went under.
Yeah.
You know, he has all of these charges against him. He has 6 children, 4 of them
babies.
1 year old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's insane.
It is alleged that to avoid the charges against him, Harry's father had fled to Jordan.
Oh.
There is speculation that Harry followed suit and did the same.
Interesting. If he had that much debt, though, I think they would have tried their very, very hardest to find him.
Because
that's a lot of debt and a lot of, bail.
Yeah.
And felony charges.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Harry's family, especially his young children, have really been rattled by this and miss him very much. They've even hired 2 private investigators to try and find him or help figure out what happened.
Wow.
Some of his family believes he tried to leave the country and then got detained under suspicion of his involvement with Hezbollah.
Oh.
At the time of his disappearance, Harry was between 5'7" and 5'9" and weighed about 205 pounds. He was last seen wearing a gray suit with a white dress shirt and red tie, black dress shoes, and a silver watch. He has brown hair and brown eyes. Anyone with any information on the whereabouts of Haydar Abu Chakra is asked to please call the Manchester Police Department. Their phone number is 860-645-5510.
Wow. At no point did I know where that was going.
Right.
That was very whiplash.
And it seems like he genuinely was a great father. He loved his children. Who
I don't
leaves behind quadruplets? Let alone 1-year-old quadruplets. Who leaves their wife?
Yeah.
The mother of their 6 children.
Yeah.
To deal with that shit herself. I wonder if he did, Lee. It sounds like he left intentionally with the purchasing of the unregistered license plates.
Yeah.
It sounds like he planned to leave.
Ugh.
So I think the speculation from his family that maybe he did try to leave and they were like, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Hezbollah, what's up with that?
Right.
Our government has also been known to, just in the airport alone.
Oh.
Just in the airport alone.
Right.
Any person they see that's like, there's this meme that I saw of, it's from Family Guy, where he gets pulled over and the cop pulls out a card and it has a bunch of skin tones and he's holding it up to him and he's like, all right, you can go.
Yeah.
It's like they do that shit at the airport. It's
absolutely.
Like if you're below, if you're an olive skin tone or below, you're getting questioned. You're getting
extra checks and extra.
Yeah, you're getting an extra pat down. You can go through the x-ray again another time.
Yep.
They're going to do a quote unquote random test on your bag.
Right.
even just with anyone that they see, let alone someone who potentially or could be accused of having an involvement with a legitimate terrorist group.
Yeah.
So many people have just been detained, questioned, shipped off to Guantanamo Bay.
Right.
God knows what's happening. Rutgers, for, yeah. Who knows how long.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
I know, it's awful.
And it's also possible that he just genuinely left from the financial strain, and maybe he was just ashamed to have left his family.
Yeah.
To have left his family with his debt.
Right.
And he was living well above his means. I mean, he drove a Mercedes.
I was surprised to hear that, and then what you said afterwards.
He was last seen wearing this gorgeous suit, a nice watch. And it mm-hmm. seemed like he really valued his appearance. He really valued looking like he was maybe from a financial status that he definitely was not.
Right.
So I'm wondering if he was detained and something happened to him there, or if he just was really ashamed of, you know, he was supposed to be providing for his family. They just right. had quadruplets. Quadruplets alone, there is another extra financial strain. One baby is like, a financial strain. Yeah. Let alone four.
Yeah. That's really unfortunate.
Yeah. So, you know, he also could have peaced out to avoid criminal charges.
Sure.
There's a whole lot of possibilities, but I mean, his family hired two private investigators. Mm-hmm. There was a video that I watched to get the pronunciation for his name, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was his family and his little kids and his wife and, you know, everybody in the neighborhood almost and everybody in kind of that community that he had in Connecticut mm-hmm. was doing a press conference. And they were saying, we don't know where he is.
Yeah.
We need to find him. We need you guys' help. If you've seen him, he looks like this. Let us know. He has six fucking children at home.
Right.
Without a father.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrible.
So I just, whatever happened, honestly, I really just wish for his family to get closure.
I do too. Because, and, you know, there's always that possibility, like you said, all of it, but also maybe he was murdered and then dumps, you know, like there's, it's so sucky not knowing even a little bit. That's awful.
And then bringing it back to the mechanics, like the first right? suspects, like right. why did they suddenly have his car keys after a week later?
Yeah, that's weird.
In the garage that was already searched. And why are they refusing polygraph tests? Mm. And why did he call his brother that night and said, they're scaring me?
Right. That is very compelling.
So there's, it literally could be anything.
Yeah. Damn. Nuts. Well, guys, that was a pretty heavy episode and very fascinating stories. So awful. Man, that's just terrible. We always want to know what you guys think about these cases, and we also always want to know if you have cases that you want us to cover as well, especially cases of people of color in New England. You can find us Instagram, truecrimeny. You can send us an email, truecrimeny@gmail.com. Head over to our website. You can use our handy-dandy submission tool and send it to us that way. Whatever you want to do, if you have a case, send it to us.
No case is too small, truly. If you're thinking, I don't know, there's not a whole lot of information, send it to us. Worst case scenario, we do a post on our Instagram and our website anyway, especially if they're unsolved, just to still get them out there. If you guys want to be anonymous, if something happened that really hits close to home for you and you might not want your name associated with it, us having suggested it, handy dandy submission tool. Again, you can be anonymous.
Yep.
Send these cases our way. No case is too small. We can truly work with anything.
Absolutely. And with that, we'll see you Thursday.
Bye.
Goodbye.